Hey everyone, ready for a deep dive into the Sixth Amendment?
Are we?
Today we're going to unpack Allen v. United States, a case that really shook things up when it comes to criminal sentencing and mandatory minimums.
It's a case with a lot of twists and turns, that's for sure. You'll be surprised how a small detail about a firearm in a robbery sparked a debate about judges and juries.
Definitely. Yeah. And the outcome even changed how prosecutors build their cases. So let's start with the basics. We have Allen, convicted of robbery.
Yep, robbed a store manager.
Right, and his accomplice had a gun.
And as many of you listening probably know, Allen was charged under 18 U.S.C. Section 924C, which has, well, you know, it has that tiered system for mandatory minimums, depending on how a firearm is used.
Okay, so break it down for us. What are we talking about sentence-wise?
Well, first off, just possessing the firearm during a violent crime, that's a five-year minimum right there.
5 years, wow.
But then, if you brandish the firearm during the crime, that jumps up to 7 years.
Okay.
And if the firearm is discharged, 10 years minimum.
So the stakes are high right from the start.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing. The jury said Allen was guilty of using the firearm. But they didn't specifically say he brandished it.
And that little detail, it becomes a huge deal.
Yeah. How so?
Well, when it came time for sentencing, the judge looked at the evidence and basically said, nope, Allen definitely brandished that firearm, even though the jury didn't specifically say that.
Yeah.
And so, bam, he hits Allen with that 7-year mandatory minimum.
I can only imagine being Allen's lawyer in that moment. You'd have to be thinking, wait, hold on. My client is getting 2 more years based on something the jury didn't even decide.
You'd think that'd be a problem.
A big one, right?
And it was. Allen's lawyer argued that this violated his Sixth Amendment rights. He even cited the Apprendi v. New Jersey case.
Right, Apprendi.
Which, as you know, established that any fact that can increase the maximum sentence, well, that has to be decided by a jury. And it has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
So it seems pretty straightforward, right? If the jury didn't find that Allen brandished the gun, the judge can't use that to increase his sentence.
Makes sense, yeah. But here's where it gets tricky. There's this other case, Harris v. United States.
Uh-oh.
And Harris carved out this exception for mandatory minimum sentences. It said those don't have to be decided by the jury.
So basically, Apprendi on one side, Harris on the other, and Allen is stuck in the middle.
Exactly. It put the lower courts in this weird in-between place.
So that all leads us to the Supreme Court, right?
Right.
What was the big question in front of them?
The court had to figure out, does the Sixth Amendment mean that any fact that triggers a higher mandatory minimum, like brandishing a firearm in this case, has to be found by the jury? Basically, does Harris still hold up or do we throw it out?
Okay, so big decision.
Yeah.
What did they decide?
Well, they went ahead and overturned Harris.
Oh, no.
5-4 decision. Yeah, but ultimately the court said that, you know, treating mandatory minimums different from maximums, it just doesn't work when we're talking about the Sixth Amendment.
So a big shift in how we think about mandatory minimums then?
For sure.
What was their reasoning?
Well, Justice Thomas wrote the majority opinion.
Okay.
And basically, he argued that there's just no reason, logically, to treat mandatory minimums any differently from maximum sentences. When it comes to the Sixth Amendment, they both set the potential punishment right.
Yeah, yeah.
So increasing either one, whether it's the minimum or the maximum, that should require a jury to decide.
To protect that Sixth Amendment right.
Right. And Justice Thomas actually said this. It is impossible to dissociate the floor of a sentencing range from the penalty affixed to the crime.
So in plain English, what he's saying is that you can't just separate the minimum sentence from the overall punishment. If a fact changes the sentence, well, the jury should be the ones to decide about that fact. Interesting. So that's a pretty strong message from the court. No more playing around with this minimum versus maximum thing.
Yep.
If it affects the sentence, it goes to the jury. But did this take away all power from judges when it comes to sentencing?
Not really.
Oh.
Judges still have a role. It's just that Allen made it about making sure the key facts for a sentence come from the jury. Judges still have some room to work within that.
So they can still pick a sentence.
Right. Within the range that's set by what the jury decides.
So in our example with Allen, let's say the jury decides, yeah, he brandished the gun. The judge can still choose to give him 7 years, 8, 9, even the full 10.
Exactly.
Got it. So it's all about balancing the defendant's Sixth Amendment rights with letting the judge tailor the sentence to the specific crime. Fascinating stuff. But before we move on to the impact of Allen, I got to know more about those concurrences and dissents. 4 justices disagreed. That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a close one.
What were they concerned about?
Well, Justice Breyer's concurrence was especially interesting. He agreed with overturning Harris, but he actually had a problem with the logic behind Apprendi.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he basically said that this whole difference between mandatory minimums and maximums, which is what the court used to decide, it's just wrong.
So he agreed with the outcome, but not necessarily how they got there.
Right. He felt like the way the Sixth Amendment's been applied, it's inconsistent.
Interesting. What about the other concurrences?
Justice Sotomayor, along with Ginsburg and Kagan, they focused on stare decisis. You know, the idea that courts should usually stick with precedent.
Don't rock the boat unless you really have to. But didn't they just overturn a precedent with this case?
They did, but Justice Sotomayor's point was that Harris had kind of become an outlier.
Okay.
Later cases, especially United States v. Booker, they had already started to weaken Harris. So overturning it made sense.
So stare decisis isn't about blindly following old decisions. It's about looking at how our understanding of the Constitution changes over time.
Exactly. Now, about those dissents.
Yes. What did Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito have to say?
Well, they were worried about the big picture, the consequences of getting rid of Harris. Chief Justice Roberts argued that the Sixth Amendment doesn't specifically talk about mandatory minimums needing to be decided by juries.
So because the Constitution doesn't forbid it, it should be okay.
Yeah, that was his main point. He thought the majority opinion was going too far, basically rewriting sentencing law.
And Justice Alito?
Oh, he went even further. He said if the court was okay with overturning Harris, then why not go all the way and challenge Apprendi?
Wow, that's a big statement.
Right. He thought the whole line of reasoning was flawed. And he thought it would cause a lot of problems in the courts.
Makes you wonder about how big of an impact just one Supreme Court decision can have.
It's true.
So beyond all the legal back and forth, what does Allen actually mean for lawyers and judges on a day-to-day basis? How did it change how criminal law works in practice?
Welcome back. We've been talking about Allen v. United States and how it changed the game for mandatory minimum sentences. We were just discussing how Allen affects how criminal law works on a daily basis.
Yeah, so one of the biggest things is how prosecutors now have to put together their cases.
How so?
Well, after Allen, they can't just, you know, hope the judge will find things to increase the sentence later on. If they want a higher mandatory minimum, they got to be a lot more careful up front.
So no more surprises during sentencing?
Right. They've got to lay all their cards on the table. Mm-hmm. If they want that higher sentence, they have to put the facts that support it right in the indictment. Like the defendant brandished a firearm, and then they have to prove that to the jury beyond a reasonable doubt.
So that's a pretty big change for prosecutors. What's that meant in practice?
Well, we see indictments now that are way more detailed and complex. Jury instructions are more specific, too. And there might even be more trials happening instead of plea bargains.
More trials. Why is that?
Well, think about it from the defendant's side. If the prosecution has to prove all these details to a jury, the defendant might think, hey, maybe they won't be able to prove it. So they might be less likely to just plead guilty.
So it gives defendants more power, more leverage.
Exactly. And Allen had a big impact even outside the courtroom.
Oh, yeah.
State legislatures, even Congress, they had to go back and fix their criminal statutes to make sure they fit with these new rules.
Wow. So they had to rewrite laws because of this one case about brandishing a gun during a robbery.
Yeah. Shows how much power the Supreme Court has, right? But even with all this, Allen didn't completely take away judicial discretion.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
Judges still have some choices to make, even after the jury decides.
Yeah, Allen is about making sure that juries, not just judges, decide those key facts that drive a sentence.
Right, right. So big picture, what's the legacy of Allen? What's its lasting impact?
I think it really cemented the jury's role in preventing excessive punishments. By linking mandatory minimums to jury findings, the court made the Sixth Amendment even stronger. You know, that right to not be locked up without due process.
It's like they were saying, hey, if you're going to take away someone's freedom based on certain facts, it's the jury, the community, that needs to decide. Not just one judge.
Exactly. And it sends a clear message to those writing laws. You can't just put vague language in criminal statutes and expect judges to sort it out. Be clear about what leads to harsher sentences or those laws might get thrown out.
Okay, so now I'm thinking back to those dissents. Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Alito, they were pretty worried about what Allen could lead to.
Right. They thought it could destabilize the whole system. And that brings up some interesting questions about the future of sentencing. What if, because of Allen, legislatures just get rid of sentencing ranges entirely? What if they say, okay, the jury finds these facts, Boom, automatic X number of years. No wiggle room for judges.
So basically mandatory minimums, but even more intense.
Kind of, yeah. It would be like legislatures trying to take back some of the power they lost with Allen. And it's not impossible. We already see some states doing things like that.
So Allen, which was meant to protect the Sixth Amendment and limit unfair punishments, might actually lead to even stricter mandatory minimums.
It's complicated, right? The court tries to reinforce the right to a jury trial, but might end up giving legislatures more control over punishments, with judges having no say.
It really shows how complicated the law can be.
Definitely. It reminds us to stay engaged, question things, and look at things from different angles. The law is always changing, and the fight for justice never really ends.
That's a great takeaway. And to our listeners, keep learning, keep questioning, keep digging deeper into the world of law. We'll be back next time with another deep dive. Thanks for listening.